Well, hey, good
Hey,
evening, everybody,
hey,
and welcome to Friday Night Conversation. My name is Jonah. I'm here with Angie.
Hey.
And Friday Night Conversation, this is the place where we talk about the gritty issues of life and faith. It's good to be here.
Yes, yeah, so good. I'm so excited for this evening. We are going to be talking about Honey, I Shrunk the Me. Not like the film, Honey, I Shrunk the Kids, but Honey, I Shrunk
Hey.
the Me. talking about maybe, you know, times where we felt maybe that we're not good enough or we've not met the measure of a standard, but I feel like we're gonna have some good conversation tonight.
Oh yeah, so good. And we've got some brilliant people here with us as well. We've got Josie here. Say hello, Josie.
Hey, evening, guys.
We've got Pastor Joe. Say hello.
Hey, up.
And we've oh
hey,
and we've got Laulu here. Say hello, Laulu.
Hey guys.
Amazing. If you're watching live on YouTube, by the way, you can see us. But hey, we love that you could come and join us if you're listening on Spotify or Apple Podcasts, wherever you're listening from. It's we're so pleased that you could come and be with us for now.
Yes.
But yeah, Honey, I Shrunk the Me. So that's like a play on Honey, I Shrunk the Kids, right?
Yes,
it
is.
Have you seen that movie?
I've seen it, but I saw it like years ago. I can remember the general concept, but I can't remember like the whole synopsis.
I've actually never seen it. Is it a good film?
It's a classic.
Yeah.
It's that scene when they're in the grass and it makes you reconsider
yes.
everything you ever thought about grass.
You know what? Part of me really wanted to be shrunk just so I could experience
yeah,
the world
too.
From like a mini perspective.
It's like mini me, isn't
yeah,
it?
Legit. Yeah, legit.
There you go. There you go. Well, see, you come to Friday Night Conversation, you get more than just the chats, you get film recommendations as well.
Legit. So, but, you know, let's get into the conversation. So we're talking about like, you know, being maybe feeling inferior, as I mentioned, maybe not feeling good enough. And I feel like if not all of us can relate to this, you know, we've all been in a season or a time where we might have felt not good enough. And so I think it'd be interesting to open up the conversation with that. And I just wanted to ask you guys, have you ever felt like this inferior feeling in your life? So Laulu, I'll go to you first.
Yeah, thanks, Angie. Yeah, I think as you mentioned, everyone has probably felt it at least once. I'll say yeah, it's a really difficult feeling as well for me personally. It was probably initially when I was coming, because I'm from Nigeria, so I'm an international student. So then when I was coming to a different country studying, you know, like a different course than what I used to, and then I used to like doubt myself, like, oh, am I good enough compared to like the home students? And they're like, would I fit in? But then actually something that really helped me was surrounding myself with really good people who then encouraged me that, you know what, I just had to adapt to a different country, which actually wasn't as bad as initially I thought it would be. So yeah, that's kind of my experience.
There you go.
Love that.
Wow.
Love that.
That's so powerful, Laulu, as well. And I mean, we're gonna dig more into those issues as well, but I suppose this whole sense of feeling inferior, it's the word that psychologists would probably use, that is the inferiority complex, right? So Josie, I mean, what do we mean when we talk about that, the inferiority complex?
Well, I think it's really interesting because as soon as you make it a complex, it sounds like quite a big thing.
Yeah, right.
I think it's, yeah, it's quite, it kind of makes it a thing.
Yeah.
And I was kind of thinking back, like, when did this whole feeling of like being inferior or, you know, not really being sure where you fit in, where did that start? And I traced it back to exams at school because let's be real, like there's always that classroom convo, isn't there? Like, what mark did you get? And what mark did I get?
There's always that person, isn't there?
Yeah.
Like,
you know, it's just, it's the awkward conversation, isn't it? And I think that's where it starts, isn't it? It's the comparison. It's the, how do I compare to the people around me? How do I compare to my peers? But I think we all feel like that. So I think the complexity kind of comes into it when it actually starts to influence the decisions we make, the conversations we have, the opportunities that we choose to take. And I think that's when it can come like quite dangerous because, you know, if great things are coming your way and you're saying no to them, I think that's when, yeah, it can be quite a challenging thing to work through. So I guess that's where the complexity side of it comes in.
Good.
So interesting, because what you're saying as well is like, actually, it's really true. The way that we think, it then like spills over into the way that we feel, the way that we behave, the way that we talk to other people as well. Pastor Joe, what do you reckon?
Yeah, I agree with what Joseph said there. At the root of the inferiority complex is comparison, isn't it? Like, you can't have it without a level of comparison. You know, it's bad enough when maybe you walk into somewhere. For me, if I go back to Angie's question, it was when, like, I guess the biggest feeling I've had of kind of feeling inferior is when I started like my professional career, like working. And then you kind of go into that and you realize that uni doesn't prepare you really at all
the real world.
For the real work world. Yeah. You know, I'm just like, what are these guys talking about? You know, and then like you spend the first 3 months kind of thinking like, I hope I don't get found out that I have no clue what's going on.
Yeah, it's true, isn't it?
You know, and yeah, absolutely. And you know, but that was kind of like, if I draw from that experience, sometimes you walk into a situation or a scenario where there are clear expectations, mm-hmm. and there's, you know, there's a clear standard.
Yeah.
And you know, because we're humans, we always want to perform well, don't we, for the most part. So you kind of judge yourself against those, and mm-hmm. you compare yourself, and you compare what you think your abilities are to how well you think you match against the standards. And more often than not, for whatever reason, because we're human beings, we you know, some people put themselves really high, and there's a danger in that. But I think that most people put themselves below, and they think, well, I'm not quite good enough, and you have doubts and stuff. And that's bad enough. It's worse when you make the standard up yourself in your head. Yeah. You make up the expectation. You kind of project what you feel the expectations are, or what you feel the standard is, or what you feel the level is. And it's really not that. And, you know, people are actually a lot more gracious than you think, you know, at least I know in our community. And then you compare yourself to something that's not real. And so then your reaction is based on something that's false anyway, and so then you have this dangerous cycle where you just feed yourself these lies, and then it goes away from being thinking habits to just living habits. And so then anything that you approach, anything you take on, you go in thinking, oh, I'm not good enough anyway. And that's where you say, like, it becomes a complex, you know. It starts early, doesn't it? And it's just like, it just keeps happening. Every time you meet something, you go into a new stage, like, am I going to meet up? Do I add up to what's required? And so then you can kind of, you know, people can live their entire lives never believing that they're good enough.
So it's so true, you know, because what you picked up on there is what I was thinking about, was that actually oftentimes when we think about the inferiority complex, there's a sense of irrationality about that, isn't there? Because you know, I think about, if I was to like compare myself as a singer to like Pastor Joe,
don't use me,
I would be 100% inferior, you know. And it's like, and there's good reason, because like objectively, like, you know, there's things like that, or I don't know, like, you know, Laulu has better dreads than myself, you know what I mean? Like, you know, you've just got these things that are just objective measures, but oftentimes inferiority complex, it drifts over into irrational stuff, like, oh, actually I'm not worth as much as somebody else, or like, actually, oh yeah, people just care more about this other person than they care about me.
No, I get, I like completely agree. I feel like, and that kind of feeds into it, like the whole idea of the, as you were saying, Pastor Joe, the expectation, but the illusion of that expectation as well, of actually like, we almost create this thing in our mind sometimes that of something being something that it's not. And therefore, as Pastor Joe was saying, that actually we're measuring ourselves up to like almost this fallacy of something that's not even like real. And then, you know, when we fall short of it, we feel bad, but like, was it even something that we could even attain in the first place, if it was something that wasn't even there? And I think as well, Pastor Joe, it's really interesting you talking about, you know, like, you know, standards and what you measure up to, and you know, expectations as well, because I feel like it's not bad to have expectations in life, is it? Like, you know, you want to expect, you know, good things hopefully for your life. And you know, when we're talking about, in this sense, you know, talking about, you know, maybe the measure we make for ourselves, maybe in our lives, in our jobs, like whatever that may be, how do we then like cultivate like healthy like expectations, healthy measures to live up to? And how do we navigate that to not, I guess, like maybe guard our hearts as well at the same time?
That's a good
question. To anybody in the group.
I was just asking someone else. Great question. I think you've got to kind of come out of yourself a bit. And I'll explain what I mean by that. We can spend so much time in our own heads. I think it's a bad sign if you find that you're the person you listen to the most.
Oh, that's good.
That's what I found in my life. I can't say that that's the same for everybody, but definitely for me, when I listen to myself the most, I just tell myself a whole load of rubbish that just isn't real. I've got to listen to other people. I've got to get different perspectives. I've got to be clear. That's the important thing. You know, like, we've just spent all this time talking about how you can judge yourself against expectations that aren't even real. The crazy thing about that is that you create this atmosphere of fear where you're so scared to even find out what the real expectations are, because you're like, I'm not going to meet up to those. Like, maybe my false expectations aren't even as bad as the real ones. You know, you just create this whole false, you know, this
you make it foggy, don't you?
Exactly. Yeah. It's just blurred vision. It's like a mirage, isn't it? Like, you know, it's like, so if something's not clear, you have no clue what it is. Yeah. But the truth is, you're so far away from it. Unless you get closer to it, you don't know what you're supposed to be doing. Mm. So you need to kind of embrace expectations in the first place, mm-hmm. to then have a good basis to then kind of go, okay, this is where, you know, the meet up, and now we're being objective. Now it's kind of objective, going, okay, this is where the expectation is, this is where I am.
Yeah.
How can I strategize? And the way you strategize is when you have other people speaking to you, because they're able to give you, you know, different perspectives. If I just sit and convince myself time and time again, and you know, that something's what it's not, I'm not going to go anywhere. And it's easier said than done.
Yeah.
But I think that's the key to unlocking it is, is actually, number one, gaining clarity. And number two, don't listen to you. You can't only just listen to yourself. Right. You know what I mean? You got to listen to some good people as well.
Because that's really interesting, isn't it? It's one of the challenges of the inferior voice in us, is that we can sometimes just assume that because the voice exists in our brain that it's right.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Totally. I think that's kind of the key part, isn't it? That it's okay to have those thoughts, and having those thoughts isn't really the problem. It's believing them and acting on them and using them as motivation. And I think another thing, which kind of going back to the question about, you know, expectation, I think it's linked to the difference between comparison and inspiration. Because, you know, if there's somebody, I mean, let's use Churchland as an example. There's some incredible, phenomenal people at this church. And if I'm going to think, you know, like, I will never be that. I can't get there. That's that's their job. That's not my role. Like, I'll just be doing, you know, something else. Then that's the comparison thing. And that's not necessarily helpful. Whereas if I'm looking up to somebody and thinking, that's so cool what they're doing, and like, they've had a whole journey to get there, perhaps that could be me too. Like, I'm going to use their story as inspiration rather than to just compare myself and have it as a dead end. And I think that's kind of key to having that expectation, because if it's inspirational and if you're kind of fired up by it, then the expectation is going to be more realistic. Whereas if you're comparing yourself and it's a dead end and you're just thinking like, this never going to happen, then it's almost going to be an unrealistic expectation because the comparison versus inspiration is off.
That's so fascinating. Like, so what you're saying is almost like it, when you see someone else doing well, to draw inspiration from that instead of seeing yourself as small in comparison. How do you cultivate that mindset?
I love the turn, like, yeah, just
it was the I like that.
Definitely. I think that's a really good question. I think it's really important to I think first of all, we talked about surrounding ourselves with good people. I think when we surround ourselves with good people who we know that we're competing for each other, then it becomes easier. Because when you're in an environment where it almost seems like it's me against the world, it's me against you in everything, then it then tends to be that you want to outshine people. But then I know that in, for example, our church community, I know that I know that you gave the example of Pastor Jonah, of you and Pastor Joe, like you aren't on worship. I know that if I know a close friend who I know I can't sing, I'm like the worst singer ever, but then instead of, you know, saying, oh, like, I want to be on stage, I want to be singing, I can then big that person up. Then, you know, and then I think, okay, like, what can I then, like, what's my talent, like, that can then use now to then glorify God and to bring people to church. I think it's just really important to know that we are fighting for each other instead of against each other.
So good, Lauli. I think that's so true. Like, actually almost recognizing that, you know, it's all right to have like different talents and different gifts, and actually, like, imagine like the world if we all were good at the same thing. Like, you know,
we were just all great singers.
Yeah, we were all just Beyonce, like, you know.
Everybody wakes up at the same time and just a massive world
exactly. That's like the core. I would try to replicate it, but I can't sing. But yeah, I think that's so true, actually, like recognizing that actually someone else's success is like a win for everybody. And actually, that just because someone else is doing well doesn't mean it's like reflects badly on myself. But actually, you can almost just steal someone else's win. Like, you know, someone else is doing good, I'm gonna get in on that, instead of looking at it in like a negative comparison way. Because I like what you're saying, Josie, like between inspiration and comparison, because, you know, sometimes we talk about comparison doesn't necessarily always have to be a bad thing. Like, you can use comparison in a way to elevate yourself and, like, you know, go further lengths. But actually, you know, not looking at that person as someone that you're trying to get one step ahead about in front of, but actually, as you said, competing for one another is a really great mindset.
Lalu said something that I really liked, that fight, like what you just elaborated on, they're fighting for each other.
Yeah.
And competing for each other. People have two different reactions to feeling inferior, to kind of going through the inferiority complex. They either cower away and bury their head in the sand, or they fight and they get ready to fight. And oftentimes when you're fighting, in fact, every time, when you're fighting out of a place of inferiority, you fight the wrong battles. And so then what you get is people, and on the outside, they look like they're, you know, you're like, oh, that person, you know. Very confident, loads of bravado, you know, but deep inside, that's a very inferior person, and they're fighting all the wrong battles. And so what happens is, because they're always in a posture ready to fight and defend this feeling that they don't like of inferiority, they pick the wrong battles. They expend so much energy fighting the wrong stuff.
True.
And you know, and it does them no good, does people no good. It hurts relationships, it hurts progress, it hurts opportunities. You know, and so you get two reactions, two extremes almost. You know, the person who cowers and does absolutely nothing, and then the person who tries to do everything that they shouldn't to, you know, out of a place of inferiority. And again, it just kind of goes back to that, what's the root cause? And I think it's a good thing to, you know, to kind of look at yourself. If you find that you're kind of stagnant, ask yourself why. And you probably notice that there's probably a bit of inferiority going on there. If you fight, if you find that you're just constantly in fight mode, you know what I mean? UFC, always ready to go. And then ask yourself why. Why am I, you know, there's definitely the good fight when you're fighting for stuff. If you're always fighting against something, then it's probably because you feel inferior about something as well. And so that whole language of fighting for each other and fighting for positivity is really, really key.
So good. It's
really true, isn't it? I find that really helpful as well, just to take the focus like onto other people and celebrating other people, like what you're saying, Larry, fighting for others. Because actually, you know, it's been said that the longer you stare at a mirror, the more flaws you're going to find in yourself. You know what I mean? So actually, if we find ourselves just incessantly focusing on ourselves, even if it's comparing to other people, well then actually we're just going to see like more and more things like actually in that mirror that we don't like, or you know, that could maybe like shoot our confidence down. Whereas actually if we make our focus onto like other people, so instead of trying to perform well myself, actually I love that my fight is actually to see other people flourish. I love that whole thought, to be honest. So then just a question, because obviously we do want to be almost like, to continue the mirror analogy, maybe this is taking it too far, but let's say that, I don't know, let's say you never look in the mirror, you know, you could maybe be a bit, you know, you might have something like on your like cheek or something and not realize it, you know what I mean? So it's helpful to like take a look at yourself every now and then and be like working on yourself. And like when you go for something, to be able to see like, oh, okay, like how did I do, like objectively? How can we do that in a good way so that it's not necessarily feeding into this inferiority mindset, but that we can actually still continue to grow and make ourselves better? Does that kind of make sense?
Yeah, definitely. Totally. I think it was mentioned last week, this was kind of about situations that we tend to look at the 10% of what's going bad in our lives, instead of the 90% that's going good. And I think it's the same in this kind of instance. So then we tend to, as you say, sometimes look at the things that we don't like about ourselves, the things and which we are working on and can improve on. And I think that the thing that we tend to do is use these things and then create that mirror that you've said, and then try and create like ourselves out of those negative things. But then actually it's so important to realize that there's those things that we're working on, but then there's so many other things that's good about us. There's so many other things that, you know, God has said about us in the Bible. And I think that's what we then go to, like, that's in the great Bible, where it says you know, like, we're made in the image of God. I think we continue to remind ourselves of that actually, like, God you know, like, has made us you know, for a purpose. And there's stuff that we are improving on, but then actually there's so much more that we have to offer. And that, we shouldn't beat ourselves up too much for the things that we're getting wrong.
I think that's so good. And I think it's Alpha, where it says about, you know, what would you do if Jesus was sat in a chair in front of you?
Just going to pause you, Josie. Alpha, brilliant course if you're listening and you're new to faith. Oh, my word. Check out Alpha. Totally. You know, you can send us a DM and we can connect you to that.
Love it. So, yeah, I think there's in one of the videos, it talks about, you know, what would you do if Jesus was sat in a chair in front of you and you could ask like one question? And I mean, firstly, that just surprises me every time because I'm like, what on earth would I say? But then I think that's quite helpful when you're thinking about kind of receiving feedback or kind of looking at your progress and kind of how can I get better? What would Jesus say to you?
Oh, wow.
I like to think Jesus is quite a reasonable kind of guy. Like, he'll tell you the truth. You know, he won't like sweet tooth it. He'll be like straight to the point. So he'll say like, I love you. You're doing great. Like you're exactly, you know, I made you exactly how I wanted to. But he'll also be like, you know, this you gave it a go, you know, maybe that didn't go so well, maybe it turns out you're not gifted in that in that area, but you know you are gifted in so many others. So I think it's interesting to kind of, like Laudy said, like read the Bible and like measure yourself based on what God says you are, and then so you know bring that element of like worldly, what am I good at, what do I enjoy, and kind of and kind of go from there.
You know, if you take your laundry, right,
I'm going here we go. I'm ready for this one.
I promise. If you put your laundry in the washing machine, right, some detergent and stuff, it's going to come out clean, right? If I put my laundry in the fridge, take it out, it's going to come out dirty. If I put my laundry in the bin and take it out, it's going to come out more dirty. It's all about the system. If I'm going to look at myself in the mirror and go, right, okay, I want to kind of be objective and real and, you know, intentional about growing and getting better. I need to have the right system to put those thoughts into. You can't just approach, you can't just walk up to the mirror with no plan. Because then you might put it in the bin. You might put your laundry in the bin and come out even worse than you went in because you've not dealt with it well. You feel even more inferior. And what is the system? What's the structure that you want to have? Well, you've got to have it all planned out. You know, what is my objective view? What's my objective plan to get better at something? Who it's can great. I talk to? What can I read? Who can I listen to? You know, having these plans, who do I want to listen to? Exactly. Who do I trust? Who are the good people in my life? If you don't have that structure, if you don't have that system, that support system, what you're going to do is you're going to, it can go anywhere. You can just, you can put your laundry in the bin and take it out. And you, why isn't it clean? Well, it's because you put it in the wrong system. You spotted the thing in the mirror and you've gone the wrong way about it. And now you're a lot worse for it. But you know, it's so important to kind of have that framework in your life first.
That's brilliant. And I mean, so I think this is nowhere near as spiritual as what you guys have shared, which maybe we're going to tap into more in a moment. But I mean, I kind of think to myself as well, it's, I mean, I heard this quote, okay, I'm big on the quote. So I really like this quote. Which was actually, instead, so when we want to get better at stuff, we should aim to compare ourselves to who we were yesterday rather than to who somebody else is today. Which kind of links in a lot to what we've discussed in last week's episode, which you should 100% go check out if you haven't heard it already. Shameless plug. But actually, it's true, isn't it? Because actually, if I'm comparing myself to like Pastor Joe with, you know, the playing the piano or singing or whatever, actually he's on chapter 10, I'm on like chapter minus 15.
I'm on so,
It helps us to get a bit of a sense of progress, doesn't
it? It's true. No, I love what you guys are talking about. And, you know, I feel like sometimes it can be hard to be objective in our own situations. I feel like, you know, when you're like maybe giving advice to someone else, it's really easy to see like the bigger picture. But when it's you, it's so hard to like mix the feelings and the emotions into it. And I like what you were saying, Pastor Joe, about like the systems you put in place. And as well, like what you're talking about, you know, who you're talking to, like, why are you listening to them? What are you reading? I think that's a really great point. And obviously, you know, we're all Christians here, we go to church, and I feel like a question that might be good to discuss is actually in the nitty gritty of it, when we are having this when we're having this complex and we're like going through it and we've been in a situation where we don't feel like we're good enough, you know, we're obviously told to go read the Bible and whatnot, but you know, I feel like when we are in moments like that, it can be really hard to take in the word of God and really not even just take it in, but when we read it, like really let it resonate in our heart. So what would you say about that? How do we how do we take in the nitty gritty what God is saying about us, even when we don't feel like, when we don't believe it ourselves?
I think it's really important. I think with the Bible as well, the first thing I'll say is to just go back to basics, and I'll just think of, I mean, there's like the popular verse, like John 3:16, like God so loved the world that he gave his only son. And then when I'm going through that period where I'm doubting myself and I think I'm less, I then make that personal, like, for God so loved me that he gave his only son. And I tend to look at that and think, you know what, it might seem like, you know, like things aren't going my way, I might think of myself as less, but then God thinks of me otherwise. And I think, as you mentioned, if we are struggling to do that, as we mentioned before already, but then surrounding ourselves with really great people to tell us that we are good enough is really good, because Pastor Joe mentioned earlier that sometimes we tend to spend our time alone and then start to believe our own thoughts, and everyone I think has been there. But then it's really important that when we are in those situations to surround ourselves with good people who we are accountable to as well, and it's then we can tell them where we are, where we're at with their inferiority complex, really complex word, and and then they can we can be accountable to them, and then we have encouraging friends who can then tell us actually we are worth it, that we are good enough, that the Bible is for us. And I think that's really helpful for me, and hopefully for everyone as well.
So good. I mean, you can't beat a bit of good community, can you? Like, you know, good people speaking into your lives. Josie, how about you? What do you
I mean,
thoughts?
It blows my mind thinking about the Bible as a book, because there's no other piece of writing on the planet that still applies today to every season, to every possible moment, to every person, to every, you know, it's so broad and it's so timeless. And that in itself just blows me away, because they're like, imagine if I wrote a letter today, like tomorrow it'd be out of date. Whereas like the Bible is for real, for real. So remembering kind of where it came from, its history, like what it's there for, because although sometimes it's difficult to, like as you say, like actually let it resonate and actually believe the words that you're reading, it's important to think, okay, like firstly, I'm not the only one who's felt like this. Like God knows I'm feeling like this. And also, like the Bible, this is exactly what it's there for. It's it's for times when we're struggling, when we don't know where else to go, when we're feeling like inferior. And it's kind of remembering, you know, that's okay. Stick with it. Like eventually you'll read something and it will be like, okay, yeah, God knows what's up. So it's kind of bringing it back to earth almost, and kind of, you know, the Bible's great, we're Christians, we read it all the time, but actually when it's hard, you're right, it is hard, but let's keep going. Like one day something will click. And like, you know, those conversations you have with people when you're like, oh, I read this amazing thing, and like it will come, you can have that conversation again, and it will switch. You just kind of have to persevere and remember why the Bible is there.
So good. I love that. That's like basically like, you know, being consistent. Like, and even I feel like, I mean, it can be easier said than done to just say, oh, I'll read my Bible every day. But actually, you know, some, like, even if you don't get it in that moment, if you read the same verse over and over again, one day, as you said, it will click. And like, you know, being consistent in just showing up and reading, just being in the Word of God can really it really does wonders.
Yeah, it's true, isn't it? And oftentimes, like, you know, sometimes we can fall into the trap of thinking that we need to do the thing that we feel like doing in the moment, like, so, and trusting that our actions always have to follow our feelings. But the thing is that our feelings follow our actions too. You know, like, if I go out for a run, then I'm going to feel a certain way after I've gone for the run. Same when we read the Bible. And there are, there are 100% those times where we're not really feeling it. You know, there are those days where you wake up and actually, I'm just not feeling it. But actually, it's the decision on those days where, do you know what, I'm not feeling it, but I'm still going to show up to God. That's why I love our lead pastor, Pastor Roy, always talks about the power of showing up. And like in those moments when we're just not feeling it, it's amazing how, I know for myself, actually showing up to God, showing up to church when I just don't feel like it, actually the days where I feel like I get the most out of it. But it leads me to another question, which is actually that, okay, so, all right, we don't want to, you know, have a mindset that is inferior, that's filled with the inferiority complex. Somebody might say that, okay, well then what's the opposite? What, you want to be like full of yourself? You want to be like really prideful and arrogant? So what's the goal? What's the goal for us as Christians?
The goal is it's important to realize that there will always be a tension of the gap between where you are and where you want. That's a reality. That's a fact of life. Okay. You don't feel inferior because there is a gap between where you want to be and where you want to be. That's not a real reason why we feel inferior, because that gap will always be there. And there are people who are living in the gap and are smashing it, and they're not feeling inferior at all. Okay. We don't feel inferior because of the gap. We feel inferior because of the way we view ourselves. And we feel inferior because at the root cause of it, we haven't quite got to the full understanding, the full perspective that our identity is not in the gap and what we're trying to reach, but our identity is in Christ. And so that's the key thing. It's like thinking, you know, if I can kind of get to that place where my worth is not in what I'm trying to do or where I'm trying to go, but my worth is in realizing and understanding God's love for me. And like, that's the key thing. It's like, oh, God loves me, like, even in the gap, like, I feel great. So it's like, okay, now I can actually approach the gap from a non-inferior complex, because I have a God that's greater than the gap anyway. It's like, like, it's like God transcends every situation. Like, it doesn't matter what the situation is. It might be work, it might be uni, it might be relationships, it might be whatever it is. You know, like, because we've got God, we are able to overcome. You know, the Bible talks about God has not given us a spirit of fear. We're able to do what we need to do, but we shouldn't be scared because there is something to do. I don't know if that makes sense.
It's like the gap between where you are and where you want to be.
And so we sometimes have the wrong thinking that we're feeling inferior because there's a gap, but that's not actually why we're feeling inferior. We're feeling inferior because we've not got the revelation that you know, Christ in us is greater than the gap. And it's like, when we get that revelation, that's when you can kind of go, yeah, I'm going to get that, you know, I can do this, because you will always have there's always somewhere to get to. And that's why you have the complex, because there's always somewhere to get to. And until we have the right thinking, we always look at the place we need to get to as the thing that causes us to feel inferior, and that's not the thing. So you keep striving to get to that place so you can overcome feeling inferior, but then you never do, because you get there and there's something else to get to. And unless we kind of get the, you know, that actually in Christ I'm enough.
And like flipping the script. I'm like, actually, God sees me as valuable
now,
and actually he sees me as valuable enough to work on.
Sure, for sure. I love that perspective, Pastor, and I've actually never thought of it like that, and I feel like it's just really opened my eyes, because I was thinking, like, you know, the same thing, like, I was gonna ask a question, like, you know, how do you deal with, like, you know, imposter syndrome when you feel like maybe you're out of your depth but you're somewhere that you feel like you shouldn't be. But I feel like you've answered my question before I've even asked it. Basically, like, talking about actually, like, the gap of, like, you know, I feel like, and I think that is something we all fall into, like, especially like in life, where we're all constantly trying to get somewhere different, and we're all constantly trying to work towards like a greater goal, which is not in itself bad, but then I feel like when our expectations fall short or when we fail, and then we feel like we're not good enough for what maybe God's called us to do, I feel like that, and that can be really like scary place to be, when you feel like, okay, God's given me maybe this calling or whatever, and like I feel like I'm falling short consistently. Why has God called me to do this then? Like, as you say, actually in the Bible, like, you know, God, there's like many a passage where, you know, God has not given a spirit of fear, God has called us for such a time as this, God is, you know, etc. And I feel like the root of it isn't necessarily like the gap, as you said, it's like the root of it, it's like the mind and our heart and what we're rooting ourselves in as well.
It's brilliant. So I've got a follow-up question. What's the difference between godly confidence and arrogance? So I guess when we get that sense of God loves us in the gap, he loves me now, but he loves us too much to leave us there, that brings us a godly confidence. How is that different to somebody that is arrogant and prideful?
An arrogant person doesn't put God in the forefront of their decisions. You know, it's it's like your bravery is just like, you just go off and you do stuff. And there's no, you don't really think about God's direction in that. You know, godly confidence comes because I have a confidence that what I'm doing is in, you know, is aligned to the will of God. That's that's what godly confidence is. It's not that God gives me this amazing confidence. I am confident that what I'm doing is aligned to the will of God. An arrogant person doesn't think about the will of God. It's just more what, you know, what's great for me. I'm gonna go do this. I can because I've done stuff in the past and I've won in some circumstances. I can go and win. And I think that's the difference. It takes God out of the mix. And you know, you get confidence from God when you're confident that what you're doing is in line with the word of God.
That's great.
I agree. I was thinking as well, I guess it's kind of about, you know, okay, God, like, I have godly confidence, let's say, but I also acknowledge that you guys do too. So it's like the acknowledging that I'm not the chosen one, I'm not the only person who can access godly confidence. We all have equal rights to confidence from God, whereas an arrogant person would be like, I have all the confidence I could ever need from, like, whether it's from God or not. But the acknowledgement that we're all in the same boat and we equally find confidence in God, I think that's a key part of it as well.
Yeah, and I think as well, because when we have godly confidence, I like to believe that we know that our worth isn't based on our performance. So when we have godly confidence, we know that we're performing, reaching a goal that maybe we've feel that God has called us to reach. But then we know that our worth is still set in Christ, and that Christ like died for us, and that we are worth it. And we know that God will bring us to where we should be. Whereas I think when you're arrogant, you do have that sense that your performance is linked to your worth, and that you then feel my performance is better than everyone else's, and that actually I am the chosen one, and that I am basically better than other people. But whereas I think on the flip side, godly confidence is knowing that that my performance doesn't determine my worth. My worth is found in God.
Arrogance is insecure, isn't it? And it's that insecurity is, remember when we were talking earlier about someone going through inferiority complex, and their reaction is fighting and just kind of being this macho thing that they're not. And that's what that is, because then when you go to the root of arrogance again, it's feeling inferior. Why you're arrogant. It's because you're trying to overcome this feeling of lack, and you're trying to fill it up with arrogance, and kind of like giving yourself those false confidence instead of filling it up with godly confidence, which goes, I am worth because I have Christ, that's good. Godly confidence.
So arrogance, all about me, godly confidence, all about God. Mm-hmm. And I guess other people as well, isn't it? Bringing that to fighting for people, what we've been talking about all this time.
I think definitely, and I think just to add to what everyone else is saying, I think it always I personally look at it in that sense of the quote of we're living for a cause that's greater than ourselves. It's not just about me on this earth. It's not about what I want to do. It's not about how I always feel, but actually there's such a greater purpose to everything that we're always doing, such a greater win for everything that we're always doing that impacts so many people around us as well. And I mean, talking about people around us, when we're maybe going through seasons and times of feeling inferior, I feel like that can really influence our reactions and interactions with people. And sometimes we can feel like maybe we're the only ones experiencing this, and if we're the only ones experiencing this, then maybe our interactions can be a bit off. So how do we interact with people in a time when we're ourselves feeling inferior? And I guess how do we still love on people as well without when we ourselves are feeling down? I got there in the end.
I love that question, because I think the Bible talks about it. I mean, the first verse that comes to mind is love your neighbor as yourself. And I think the key part of that verse is loving yourself, because you can't love on others without loving yourself. So if you're going into a social situation feeling unworthy, feeling nervous, feeling like you're not prepared to love on others, then you've got to take a second to reset. You've got to take a second to think, okay, I have great friends. Mm-hmm. I have a great community. I need to approach this in a way that is going to be helpful for them just as it is for me. So kind of like, how do I put this? Sort of in my mind, it's like you go into a situation. Have you ever heard of the term mood hoover? Is that
mood
a Savage
hoover.
Family
mood
thing?
Hoover. No, but I'm
you
gonna
never
want to
be
it.
The mood hoover, right?
Wow. If you're the mood out the room. Yeah. Oh, that's a good one.
So we've got laundry. We've got mood hoover.
We're making a kitchen.
I like this.
These are the new FNC hashtags for this week.
For the people watching live on YouTube, have seen that Pastor Roy has commented, Pastor Joe, are you dealing with your laundry this evening?
It's on my mind. That's
it.
It's actually in the fridge waiting for me to get back.
It's in the fridge. Oh my gosh. Josie, you were talking about mood hoover. All right, we're ready.
So it's just this idea that if you're going to go into a social situation and just suck the life out of everybody and be that person. And I mean, it's hard, because if you're not feeling up to being the life of the party, then it's hard to fake it. Mm-hmm. But I think to a certain extent, you do have to fake it till you feel it. And if you approach a situation thinking, okay, maybe I'm not going to be the life of the party, but I want to attend the party. And, if you're in a good crowd of people and if you're in a good bunch of friends, friends, the chances are they'll be doing the opposite and they'll be noticing, okay, hey, they're not seeming like themselves. Let's go a bit extra. Let's kind of bring the mood up a little bit more so that their lowness can kind of meet us in the middle.
Yeah.
I mean, social interactions are weird because people are kind of bouncing off each other all the time, aren't they? Yeah. But I do think, like, if you're approaching a social situation feeling inferior and feeling a bit unworthy, then kind of refocusing your mind onto, okay, I'm just going to enjoy this time with my friends and not necessarily focus it on me and therefore be the mood hoover. You kind of want to avoid the mood hoover syndrome.
Mood hoover, I like that.
It's good, so good.
I like to think of something Pastor Roy says, he's said a few times. He says, if you're having a bad day, pick up your phone and send 10 texts out to other people and encourage them.
Like
that seems so upside down. It's like, I'm having a bad day, I don't need to be texting people going out, you know. But then you do that and guaranteed you feel better afterwards. It raises your mood. So instead of being a mood hoover, you become
is the opposite?
What's the opposite?
A mood like uplifter. A leaf blower.
Oh my gosh. A fan. That's what it is.
A mood fan. A mood fan. A vibe fan.
And it's like I'm people's fans because, you know, I'm celebrating them.
We love it. We love it.
That one. I like that, Josie. Okay.
Thank you for that, Josie.
So good.
No, this is really good. This is really, really good. And it kind of gets me just thinking about those social scenarios because it makes me just think about the value of having really good friends. Because I kind of think to my own experience with, you know, with these inferiority thoughts. And, you know, kind of like we've covered in this conversation, you know, we all have that voice in our minds. And actually, like, I don't know, I mean, maybe there's some people out there that just don't have that voice at all. Like, I wonder what that's like. But I feel like for most of us, probably it's a case of actually, Josie, you said at the beginning about learning which voice to kind of listen to and, you know, growing the voice of God like in our lives and listening to that more than we listen to this other voice. It makes me think of a book by a brilliant pastor called Pastor Stephen Furtick called Crash the Chatterbox. And he would talk about how actually that voice that brings all of these negative voices to our minds is like that chatterbox, isn't it? But it makes me for me that was actually such a big deal. Like realizing that, wow, actually, like, this is something that everyone struggles with. And so actually, like, how does that speak to the importance of community and, like, handling stuff like this?
I think you've, like, highlighted it, actually, the fact it happens to everyone. And I found out there's actually a word for us for that thing. It's called pluristic ignorance. I can't say inferiority complex, but I can say that.
Have we changed the topic?
No. It's literally, I was like, wow, I didn't know this was a thing. But it's like the whole idea of thinking of, like, the thing that I'm worrying about, the thing that I feel inferior about, because nobody else has voiced it, I think I'm the only one that's going through it. When actually, in fact, everybody else in this room is thinking the same thing, but none of us have talked about it together. And so I've totally forgot your question.
What's the importance of community?
Importance of good community. And I think that's the thing with good community is that actually we, as much as we encourage each other, we're also real with one another. And we're also always seeking to draw the gold out of every single person that we're with. Like, you know, we always talk about, well, I always know that anytime I come to a church function, anytime I walk into a room, I will leave that room better than when I entered that room, because people want to see me win. People want to see me, you know, like, go for gold. So I feel like even in those days where I walk in and I feel like, oh, you know, everyone's gonna be thinking I did this wrong or like this, that and the other, I know for a fact that I've got good community that regardless of what I'm thinking, they're always gonna feed into the good and they're always gonna see the good in me before I even might see it in myself. And I feel like that's what good community does. It doesn't draw and nitpick at you, but it always sees the gold in you as well.
Pastor Craig Rochelle has a book called Winning the War with Your Mind. And there's a quote in there that I absolutely love. He said that our lives move in the direction of our strongest thoughts. And if there's ever an argument for good community, that's it right there. Because when you live in the echo chamber of your own head, you know, and then 10 years down the line, you look at yourself and, you know, that mirror we're talking about, what you see is what you were thinking about 10 years ago. And unless we kind of get what we're thinking about now out of that place of feeling inferior and into that place of thinking what God has spoken over our lives already, and, you know, talking about how he loves us and you know, greater is he that is in me than he that is in the world, and all of that kind of thinking. Unless we get that going, and the way we get that is by being in good community and strong community, because it helps shape our perspective and helps us look at things different. We're going to get 10 years down the line and realize that we've headed 200 miles an hour in the wrong direction, and then you're left with an even bigger job to clean up than if you kind of started dealing with it now.
Yeah.
And that's such a huge, you know, advocate for being in, you know, people. I'm an introvert, right? Again, I know we've talked about this before, and yes, there's a scale, and I'm kind of on that end of it. And there are people out there that go, I just like to do me. I'm a one man person. I'm a one woman person, or whatever. And I'm like, nah, you're not. You're just telling yourself that because you know because maybe you're scared of kind of integrating yourself, and that's the truth. There's like people have real fears, and maybe you know, feeling scared about getting into social context and stuff like that. But we kind of touched on that, I think, either last week or 2 weeks ago, about how you can kind of best kind of, you know, deal with that, because it's so important to get into community. It's so important to have somebody other than yourself speaking to you, because otherwise you're just directing the way that you're going, and there's a huge chance you're not going in the right direction.
So true.
I mean, I kind of think that, like, linking in with what these guys have said,
LinkedIn,
exactly. Is that actually, you know, I kind of think of myself in church across the years, if I think back through my time in youth and stuff, and I appreciate, you know, not everyone may be able to have had the same experience, but over the years, like, I've heard, like, multiple talks on finding your value in God and what he says about you more than what, like, I say about me, and not believing all of my own thoughts about myself and blah, 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 blah. And, like, all of that stuff is, like, absolute gold. And every time what gets me is that actually it's really, really helpful.
Yeah.
And what I think that highlights is that actually the getting to the point of the importance of community is that actually a lot of the time, sometimes we need teaching and learning something new, but actually sometimes we just need reminding. True. And actually sometimes we need reminding more than we need learning something new. Actually, like, you know, if I kind of think about winning the war in your mind is a brilliant way to put it.
Yeah.
Actually, you know, those are the key things. Like, we want to know what God says about us. We want to, like, get into good community that is going to, like, build us up and not pull us down. But actually, like, the challenge is in the day to day, it's so easy to let that drift to the back and drift into bad habits. Whereas actually, like, the value of community is that when we get around one another, it reminds us all the time. Yeah. Oh yeah. Like, people encourage you. Oh yeah. Like, that person thinks I'm valuable. That person believes in me. Yeah. Oh yeah. Like, I go to life. Oh yeah. God thinks that I'm worth something right now.
True.
And, like, it kind of continuously feeds into that.
Can I add to that? I think perhaps, like, maybe the language of, like, finding your value in God can be for some people unhelpful, and probably feeds into that inferiority complex. Perhaps it's better to think of it as understanding the value that God places on you. Because then what happens is, when you're trying to find your value in God, again, it's back to that place of, how do I meet up to God? You're never going to meet up. That's a gap you're never closing. And so then people can then kind of, like, go into even this deeper hole of thinking, I'm just not good enough for God, you know. But then when you talk about understanding and having a revelation of the value that God places in me, you suddenly realize that whilst we were yet sinners, Christ died for us. God's value in me is regardless of, you know, he's placed, it's already done. He's already died for me. He loves me that much. So much more than I can ever find and kind of act out and live out. And that completely flips the script. So now it's less of me trying to and striving to be this thing and this person. And absolutely, yes, we want to be. I'm not saying be complacent, but it changes the strategy. It's less of me striving and pushing and trying to do things by my own strength, and more of me living out of the revelation and the freedom and the love and the worth that I see that God places on me.
Yeah.
All of a sudden, I can breathe easy, you know. All of a sudden, when I'm not so, like, nervous and anxious all the time, I'm not feeling constantly inferior. I actually feel great. I'm like, God loves me. Yeah, I'm cool. You know what I mean? Like, I'm absolutely, I can absolutely go and grow, and I can absolutely go and you know, and become more and more like Jesus every day. But I'm not doing that out of a place of feeling inferior and feeling a sense of lack that I absolutely need to meet. That's really an unhealthy approach. I'm actually doing it because God loves me so much, I just want to be a bit more like him every day. You know what I mean? So it takes the pressure off, and it just makes it a lot more enjoyable, because otherwise you just got this pent up yeah. tension all yeah, the time, don't you? And it's yeah, just like, I need yeah. to be more like God. I need to be more like God. Yeah. Like, hey, I love you. Just do life with me. You'll
yeah,
be fine.
It's true. Yeah, yeah. It's true. And I think as well, just to like off the back of that, I think it just highlights the whole idea of like, we don't have to do this alone. Like yeah. we don't like, and I thought Josie, you said it earlier, you know, God knows our thoughts. So in some ways we don't have to feel inferior alone because God is always with us, and therefore yeah. we don't even need to often at times feel inferior because God has already equipped us with what mm. we need to overcome whatever obstacle or challenge we're going through. And I always remember, like, you know, a quote that says, when you know whose you know who you are. Yeah, and I feel like that so kind of ties into what you're talking about with the value that's been placed on our life. When we know and recognize the godly value that we have, as you said, it feels like it should be pressure, but also at the same time, it feels like a weight that's been lifted off your world because, like, it's nothing that we do because God has already given it to us. Like, it's already been done for us. Yeah. Like, we can just go along with the yeah. flow and go with yeah. the ride so and just good. Do the best that we can do as well.
That's yeah. brilliant. And actually that sense that actually because God's already done that, actually no matter what I do, my value is never up for grabs.
Exactly.
Like no matter what we go for, no matter how we perform, sometimes we're going to grow, sometimes we might slip back, but regardless of that, nothing can take away yeah. that so Jesus good. Died for us at our worst. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So our value is off the table.
Yeah. yeah.
Which I think is a helpful thing to have, isn't
yeah.
it?
Yeah. Yeah. So true.
Maybe we'll bring this to the final question then. Yeah. All right. So one of the challenges of having these like inferior complex voices going around our minds and maybe ruling the roost in our minds is that they can kind of stop us from going for opportunities and can sometimes like stunt our growth a little bit. Yeah. So how can we kind of manage that? I guess this kind of links into maybe things of fear of failure and stuff like that. How can we kind of manage things like that so that we don't stunt our growth?
Yeah, I think it's really important. I think Pastor Joe already covered it. And you guys have already said that we shouldn't obviously base our we shouldn't base our worth and our value on our performance. Mm-hmm. And it's just really down to realizing that we're talking about our measures. I think our main measure is the love of God, and the love of God, spoiler alert, doesn't change because of our performance. Mm-hmm. So then actually, if that's our standard, then instead the love of God can just help us to actually grow in improving in what we want to do. Yeah. But then actually, like, if we do slip back, it's fine, because in God's love, there's also grace, and he can he can continue to push us on to get better and better at that. So yeah, I think it's just really important to know that our driving force is God's love, is God's grace. There's not some sort of judgment that'll come upon us immediately we mess up. Like, that's not what it is, but actually God is really gracious with us. We cannot really root ourselves in God's word, in God's amazing community that can really remind us of that as well.
It's great, Lally.
So good.
I'll tell you something that's so really helpful with that most people wouldn't think of, I guess, or that doesn't make sense. There doesn't seem to be a link. Serving, and I'll explain why. Because what you tend to find when you serve is you're met with, you know, take our church for example. I guess, you know, pre-COVID times things look a bit different, but even now, like, there's so many opportunities to serve, right? There's always stuff to do, there's always new stuff to try. And if you're the kind of person, like most of us, let's be honest, you're faced with something new, it's a bit scary, you don't want to do it. But what you find is that when you serve, and you serve in a healthy church like the Junction Church, you do it in an atmosphere of love where everybody wants you to win. And so what that does is that helps you build confidence, because you're constantly doing stuff that you shouldn't be able to do. But whilst you're learning it and you're getting closer to, you know, the expectation, as it were, there is this atmosphere of love. It's like you're just protected by love. That builds your confidence. So it's like, first off, my confidence is built up in the house of God. And then as I go out into my job, into my degree, and into whatever, that's where I'm taking confidence from. I'm not just like blindly going in and kind of going, right, I need to muster up, you know, the confidence. No, I've done all of that behind the scenes. That's going on. That's going on every Sunday. That's going on every other week in life groups and in equipment and all the stuff that we've got going on. I'm serving and I'm doing stuff that, you know, a couple of years ago or a few weeks ago, I'd have been like, nah, I would never do that. You know, if someone asked me at work to do, I'd be like, nah. But someone asked me at church to be, I'm like, yeah. Because at church, I know that, you know, everybody wants me to do well. So I build my confidence in the house of God. And that's out of that is how I can then kind of be confident to try out things in life. Because if you don't have the right I guess, foundational or kind of soil to grow it, then you won't be able to grow it. You know, you just kind of feel like you're knocked back all the time. Because let's be honest, the world is nothing like the house of God. It's true. Very different.
True.
And you kind of need, that's why it's so important to say.
Yeah. I love what you're saying. And I really resonate with like, when you were like, some of the stuff I would do like outside of church, some of the stuff I do inside church, I'd never do outside of church. Yeah. Like literally, like that is so me. Like I feel like people won't know, but I was a really shy person. Like,
I'm
really shy. Like, and I'm an introvert as well. And so I remember when like Pastor Jonah would be like, Angie, do you want to host? And I was like, in my heart, I was like, not really. But I was like, you know what? Like the way obviously Pastor Jonah put it across is like, you just do it once. Like we're all going to be like, you know, encouraging you, championing you. Just, and in my heart, I was like, okay, Angie, you just got to take the opportunity. And I feel like that in itself, like just taking the opportunity, just going for, I guess, the risk in itself, like can help you in this area of maybe feeling like, I feel like I'm not good enough, but actually if you never try, how do you know if you're even good enough in the first place? And like it always reminds me of, there's a really cringy quote where it's like, you know, you miss 100% of the shots you don't take. You can quote me in that.
So good.
But like if you don't at least take the step out, you know, step out the boat, step like into the opportunity, you'll never even get the opportunity to see if it does or doesn't work. And the thing is as well, sometimes if it doesn't work, that's fine, because not everything in life will always work. But you know, at least you've had the opportunity, you've had the experience. And like as we say in church, I think, and Pastor Roy said, you know, fail at least upward, like you know, at least give your, if you're like, give yourself the opportunity to know that even if I do fail, it's not the be all and end all, but I'm going to take this experience and like use it in a way that will influence my next opportunity that I come across as well.
Yeah, so good. I think it's really important as well to not underestimate the power of, you know, like acknowledging that we have two voices in our head.
Right.
Because if we're trying to go at life thinking, you know, I have to think positively, I have to be like, I can't let myself think that I'm inferior, I think that's unrealistic, because we always have that voice that will tell us, you know, you're not worthy, you can't do it, you're not good at this. When actually, if you acknowledge, okay, I have two voices, which one am I going to listen to? Which one am I going to put a full stop at the end, or which one am I going to expand on? You know, and I think it's actually, there's a power behind that. Even just acknowledging, yeah, I'm built with two voices, which one am I going to choose to follow? And so when an opportunity comes around, okay, there's going to be two sides of me. One is going to be like, yeah, let's do it, I'm ready. The other side is going to be like, I'm not doing that. So which one are you going to go for, you know? And I think as soon as you, when you make that decision, I'm gonna try my best in every opportunity to listen to the latter, I don't know which order I say. Then you're kind of putting, you're setting yourself up in the best way as you possibly
love that.
And it's almost like the more you decide to think a thought or to listen to one of those certain voices, it's like over time that voice gets louder and the other one gets quieter, isn't it? It's so the good. Funny thing is actually the one that we choose to focus on more. And so actually, it's kind of like almost in the little things, it's like actually deciding, no, I'm going to be disciplined in my thought life here, because this matters not just for this moment, but for the moments that are going to come after as well.
So good.
I kind of think about, I mean, just one other thing. So I just want to share this because it was just like really interesting to me this week. I feel like Elon Musk has been in the news a lot recently.
What's he called himself? The king of tech?
The king of tech.
Yeah. Brilliant. I love
you know, you're the engineer.
Well, I'm not the king.
Is it your goal now to dethrone him?
Eventually. That's the gap. But don't worry. I know my worth in price, and one day I'm going to be the king of tech.
Yeah. I didn't know that. Okay, so he calls himself the king of tech, right? Doing a bit of research. And Elon Musk, in 1999, when he and somebody else came up with the idea of PayPal, PayPal was voted the worst business idea in the world at that time. Whoever said that was so wrong.
I know.
But actually for Elon Musk, actually, like in that moment, if his value had been in what the other voices are saying, he would have stopped. Or if he had given total attention to those voices, he would have stopped. Or if he had considered that failure, he would have stopped. But actually, like being able to look back now and just see the wild success, it just goes to show that actually when maybe we meet a roadblock that we might consider failure to just keep on going, to keep on pushing, to keep pushing forward. And maybe it's not going to be the next PayPal. Maybe we need to, you know, actually, okay, maybe that didn't work. I'll move on to another thing. Yeah. But to keep showing up, to keep showing up to God, to keep showing up to church, keep getting around that community, keep on focusing on those thoughts and remembering that I'm not the only one that struggles with this.
Yeah.
If we keep going, we can get somewhere better and we can move forward. So,
see, now he can call himself a king of tech and nobody's arguing.
Yeah, well, exactly. For now, you're on the way.
For now, watch out.
I know, Pastor Joe's on his way.
So maybe just before, just as we kind of finish up, maybe like, there's a ton of great resources out there that people can use to like help along this. I know you mentioned a great book.
Yeah, Winning the Battle Against the Mind by Pastor Craig Rochelle. Brilliant book. Really, really good. Loads of helpful tips in
great
there.
Great stuff. Yeah, all about winning the war of your mind. Yeah. Angie?
I've really been into like TED Talks. So I feel like, you know, you could literally go onto YouTube. There's like thousands of resources on there. And they're really good because they because of personal experience, I feel like they're really easy to relate to and actually get a lot of information for. So literally TED Talks, YouTube it.
Yeah.
Out
brilliant.
There.
Brilliant. Lalu?
Yeah, I think I know that you mentioned it earlier already, Pastor Junior, but then the book Crash the Chatterbox, I think is really useful. It's something that I got recommended once I came to the UK. I think it's been really helpful and hopefully can help others as well.
Amazing. And Josie?
I'm not going to lie, this is female directed.
Okay.
Shock horror, I haven't read any guys, of my resources. But there's a great book called Free to Be Me by Stacey Eldridge. I think that's her name. And it's just so good. It's more tailored for young women and just about kind of finding, there's a great chapter, Be You, Not Them. Mm-hmm. And it basically love just that. Talks all about this. It's so good.
It's great.
And it's quite funny as well. She's quite a funny author.
Brilliant. There you go. And so there you go. There's a whole bunch of brilliant resources. And the last one that I would just add on there is, I've not read the book Winning the War in Your Mind, but I have there's a free devotional on YouVersion. So if you want to just check out a little bit there, 7 days, that's really, really valuable stuff. But hope you've taken something from this evening. Hope this conversation has been really, really helpful. We've got a brilliant Sunday coming up today, haven't we, Angie?
Yes, we do. Sunday is going to be so good. We're starting a new teaching
series. Pastor is doing a series all about the church. And the title for this week's service is I Will Build My Church.
You're not gonna, we can't miss that. That's gonna, it's gonna be so good.
For real.
I love it.
That's the red bit, isn't it? That's written in red in New Testament. That's Jesus' words.
Jesus' words written in red in some Bibles.
Don't mess about with the red text.
Exactly. Do not mess with the red text.
And then it's only 3 Sundays until Easter.
Oh, yes. I am so, so pumped. So we're getting back together. Easter. We Rise Again is a known fact now.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, if it wasn't, oops.
Nobody knew actually.
Can you imagine?
She's on it right now.
Guys, change your plans. Angie said we're doing this thing.
Yeah, but like we're getting back together in person for Easter weekend. So Good Friday and Easter Sunday. We'll be back at Delisle College.
Delisle College in Loughborough. Campuses are coming together for that weekend, including Beacon Church as well. It's going to be one heck of a weekend.
I'm so excited.
We've got some great worship stuff planned.
We do, we're really looking forward to it. We've got it's great to be able to have live music again. Looking forward to it. It's gonna be
100%. And so you can book into those today if you visit www.junctionchurch.net. the booking links are right there on the homepage. Somebody will drop the link. If you're watching this live on YouTube, you'll see it in the comments there. Someone will put it there. If you're listening on podcast, then you're going to want to get on over to the website and book as soon as possible, because you do not want to miss this weekend. You want to secure your seat be there, and it's going to be amazing. Hey, if you enjoyed tonight's podcast, well then why not give this video a like on YouTube, subscribe to our channel for more videos like this, and if you're listening on Spotify or Apple Podcasts, wherever it is, why not give us a little review as well? That just helps get this out to way more people who will be able to hear the content as well. But it's been amazing hanging out with you guys today, wherever you've been listening from, and we will see you next time.